Michael Avery with Classic Business.
Well, time to talk about fees must fall. And I'm not talking about tertiary education. It certainly looks like that mantra is spilling over into the financial advice industry. It has been, let's face it, for quite some time, this focus on fees. Last year saw a tipping point, if you like, one of the largest fund managers in the world, Fidelity, invoked the so-called nuclear option by lowering both fees and minimums to zero on some of its tracker funds. And it would seem that the only way to lower fees further from there would obviously be to pay investors to invest in your products. Now, last week's Alexander Forbes chief investment strategist, Vladimir Nedeljkovic, was quoted by the Business Day saying that passive asset managers need to do more than just track the index if they want to charge any fee. It hasn't gone down all that well in some quarters. We see passive managers have questioned whether there's a practical element to this, whether or not it's practically possible. So tonight we open up the debate about fees in the passive space, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Alexander Nedeljkovic, Alexander Forbes chief investment strategist. Vlad, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael.
And also on the line, we've got 10X CEO Stephen Nathan. Stephen, always a pleasure.
Yes. Lovely talking to you and your listeners, Michael.
And Jason Swartz, who's a head of portfolio solutions at Satrix. Jason, thanks for making the time.
Evening, Michael.
Now, I'm going to ask you to kick us off tonight, Jason. Everything has cost, even low-cost index funds. So just so we know what we're talking about to compare apples with apples, what are the key cost components of so-called index or tracker passive investments?
I think, Michael, if you're thinking about fees, you know, it's multifaceted. So there are lots of components that go into setting fees. You know, we would think about administration that often makes up quite a big cost. And then it just depends on the mandate and what you're trying to track. Obviously, if you're tracking a third-party index, you've got to pay them license fees. And then just background infrastructure, so systems, databases, you know, dealing with corporate actions, trading, all those types of infrastructure you've got to pay. And that, you know, makes up quite a chunk of your fees.
And so the index providers here charge a small fee. So who are the big three index providers? If we're looking globally, that's obviously the MSCI that we quote here on the show all the time. MSCI, S&P is another one. Those are the ones that design the indexes. And then obviously you've got your fees for trading and how often you trade in and out and platform fees and all of that. So there are lots of layers. Now, Vlad, to bring you in here, you were speaking at the Business Day Financial Mail Investment Dialogue last week and were quoted. So sometimes one can be quoted out of context. So I'd like just to get verbatim what you were referring to, because context is everything, obviously, when you were referring to fees.
Yeah, so obviously I was talking in a broader context of adding value to investors. So, and the point is that obviously as the time has progressed, more and more the investors are becoming more sensitive to fees and are prepared only to pay to real value added. Now, that doesn't mean that even for the standard traditional market cap weighted index or index tracking, you're not going to pay any fees, because as Jason just mentioned, obviously there are some real cost that needs to be covered. But fact remains that those margins have been under pressure, and they're going to continue to be under pressure. So if the product providers, and I mean asset managers, solution providers, advisors, are going to continue, if they're going to survive, if they're going to continue to charge fees, then obviously the value that they add to investors need to be demonstrable, it needs to be there. And that is obviously moving from traditional index tracking to things that add more value, such, for example, smart beta, and from that to providing solution and providing proper advice. So my comment wasn't really just about index tracking. It was the whole value chain, and the fact that investors really require proper value add.
Stephen, when we look at this issue, you know, from your perspective, what do you make of the current debate that we're having around fees in the passive environment, and the fact that you've got a firm like Fidelity that is now charging zero fees on certain products?
Yes, the fact that we're talking about fees is fantastic for consumers, because typically the investment industry has not disclosed fees, and the reason for that is that the investment industry makes their living out of fees. So the more the consumer pays, the better it is for the industry. And you can imagine that if you have customers who don't know what they are being charged, and effectively as an industry we just take our fees, we never invoice our clients, and we're very happy that they have no idea what fees they've been charged or the long-term impact, because quite frankly, if they knew, they would be up in arms. So it's fantastic that we're talking about this. And I think, Michael, the problem with the industry is that it's incredibly complex, or it makes itself incredibly complex, and also it sees a lot of these things from the industry's perspective. So, your earlier question was, what is the cost of an index fund versus an active fund? And the reality is, and this might surprise your listeners, is that there isn't much of a difference, because both funds need a legal entity, and they need auditors, and they have some basic costs of operating the fund. And supposedly the big difference is that in an active manager, I need to pay a lot for a fund manager to manage a fund. But you're talking about one or two people's salaries. So recently there's a fund, an offshore fund, that's charging performance fees despite underperforming for 5 years, and it's got a 2% expense ratio, and it manages about 100 billion of assets. So it's making 2 billion rand a year, yet it's delivering below market returns. And it's, what do you need to pay one or two fund managers that are underperforming the index?
We can mention names. Alan Gray, it's been all over the media. I mean, we can say it. But that's the problem. We're talking about fees, Stephen, and I really want to touch on a key issue. And yes, fees are important. And as we see the pressures globally, there's MiFID, there's regulatory forces driving transparency and fees down. But for me, there's almost a bigger issue in the room here, and that is one of trust. In an environment where we've seen a lot of product mis-selling, where we've seen a degree of murkiness around what certain products actually cost at the end of the day, as this all comes to the surface, are we not at risk of alienating a large chunk of the market? And at a time when increasingly financial advice is necessary, one has to navigate a world of too much choice, of what sort of tax wrapper do I put on this? And really, we should be getting advice. But I speak to a lot of my colleagues, friends, family, and acquaintances, and there is a very real lack of trust in the financial services industry. Stephen?
Yes, and as I said, I think that's good. I think people that approach this industry with skepticism are likely to do better for themselves than people that approach it with blind faith and trust. And, if you're a consumer and investor, basically you need two things from the industry. The one is you need some kind of a plan. So if I'm saving for retirement, I need some kind of a plan which says that more or less I need this amount of capital to be able to retire so that I can provide myself an income for the rest of my life. So the one thing is you need a plan. And the second thing is you need a portfolio that's going to give you the best value for your savings. So if you look at the way the industry works, the industry doesn't really give you the plan or the portfolio. It gives you 1,600 different options. So the interests are misaligned, and that's why people struggle to understand what's going on and to understand whether they have the right product and they are performing as they should and the fees they're paying. Because if you look at the total cost the consumer pays, there's really three pieces to it. There's an advice, what I pay for advice, what does I pay for administration, my list platform fee, and my investment portfolio. So here we're focusing on the investment portfolio, where passive funds are generally much cheaper than active funds. But the full value chain, or the cost that the consumer incurs, is so much greater than what most people see.
Vlad?
Yeah. It looks like I'm going to take the other side of this argument at this point. Because, yes, obviously, I think the transparency is quite important, so people need to know what they're getting. But what they're actually getting depends on, obviously, if you just do a very simple multi-asset portfolio created out of passives, you'll get relatively good performance. If you want to get a bit more, it is known that, for example, proper asset allocation adds quite a large percentage of the performance of the portfolio. Now, that is not something that one can automate, at least at the moment. If you believe, and lots of people do believe, that there is value added by active asset managers, then first of all, selecting the right asset managers is important, and combining them with passive building block is important. Three, if you want to add, if you just say passive, passive is not just traditional market cap weighted. It is quite a lot of value add that can be added. Now, in the end, what is the proof of the pudding is in the actual performance or the risk-adjusted performance of the portfolios, and we will see a divergence. Portfolios that will give you standard run-of-the-mill thing that can be automated will be pressed to lower the fees. The portfolios and the providers that will provide value-added service that will translate into demonstrable long-term outperformance on a risk-adjusted basis will be able to charge more fees, and I think that's how it should be.
If you can prove demonstrable long-term outperformance, and in a context, in the South African context, let's face it, over the last 20 years before this last decade, which has been absolutely abysmal, we've seen returns around 15% being the norm, which is well above CPI plus any kind of hurdle rate. Over the last decade, those returns have dropped to somewhere around 8%. When you look at inflation and you put fees on top of that, in fact, investors in real terms have lost money in many instances. Is that why we're seeing this increased focus on fees and the kind of sharpening of the pencil around that conversation?
Without a doubt, and that is normal human behavior. So in the periods where you have outperformance, everybody's happy. When you have low market return environment, obviously people question everything. But when we talk about demonstrable performance, there are ways to be able to tease it out, because what is normally happening and what we see in the industry, people only focus on the last quarter performance and invest in people that have been outperforming over the last year, over the last quarter, and so on. Even the awards are being created on that basis. Now, if you take it into account that quite a large portion of the outperformance can be replicated, then using factor investing. So anything in above that persists over time, that is alpha. And BPN actually started Alexander Forbes started last year with Asterix Awards, where we basically look at the active asset managers that demonstrate real skill, not just the luck, because lots of the active performance can be attributed to luck. If you take that out of the equation, what remains over a longer period of time is a skill. And of course, skill should be rewarded. Proper asset allocation that adds a lot of value should be rewarded. Just doing run-of-the-mill thing that anybody can do should be also rewarded, because you have to administer and all that, but those margins are going to be tighter.
That makes sense, Jason. The more fundamental movement that we see has also been fund managers perhaps building their own indices, self-index, so to perhaps strip out here what they're paying to the MSCIs and S&Ps of this world.
Yeah, Michael, so, I mean, you know, you also have to do that quite selectively, because, you know, where you've got capacity to be able to do research and understand how to create different indices, you know, clients, you know, don't really want the proliferation of these indices, but, you know, where you can really add value, and not just from a cost perspective, but, you know, trying to find out what really works in South Africa, what way of designing different indices can really add value to clients. And, you know, by adding that type of intellectual property and, you know, with a deep practical understanding of what works in South Africa, how to create benchmarks, how to diversify them, how to build indices that aren't concentrated. You know, I think that movement has really happened globally with the likes of Fidelity, Vanguard, and we've seen it in South Africa as well, where some managers are starting to self-index statics. You know, we start to do that as well selectively. And we think that can really add value to clients and be able to potentially solve a lot of the investment requirements And then also passing on that benefit of reduced fees, because we don't have to pay that additional cost to a third index, third-party index provider.
Stephen, what do you make of that approach?
So I just want to come to Vlad, what Vlad was saying, because I strongly disagree with that line. You know, that's what we've been hearing from fund managers for decades, is that, you know, if you can identify the right factor or the right skill fund manager, you're going to get rewarded. And you know, for decades, we've seen that most active managers and enhanced indexing is what used to be called quantitative investing 20 or 30 years ago. So you know, if a fund manager has this unique source that no one else has, they're going to have one portfolio for you to invest in, but they don't. They say, well, I've got a dividend fund and a cash flow fund and a low PE fund and, you know, various factors. So you know, I think it's irresponsible of this industry to keep on talking things that are blatantly, you know, very difficult to do, and research has improved them, because it creates the impression that, you know, some star fund manager can beat the market or some financial advisor can give me substantial outperformance, and there's no evidence to justify that. And as an industry, we like to overcomplicate things. So, you know, even with these benchmarks, I mean, a benchmark is nothing more than, you know, a bunch of shares that constitute an index. But in order to have credibility, that's why you said you have firms like MSCI and FTSE to make it independent. Once again, even if you look at from an investor's perspective, you're talking about 2 or 3 basis points, whether you license it or you do it yourself. But the issue is that most retail investors are incurring 300 basis points because of the whole value chain, and not necessarily the actual index piece is very small.
Vlad, where's the evidence to demonstrate that one can actually select those managers who are going to outperform?
So there are a couple of things. First of all, let's start with the market cap weighted index. That's the normal market, top 40, all share index and so on, CAPSWIX. There is huge amount of research from 70s, Pharma and French and so on, that factor investing can over the length of the business cycle outperform that. More in the developing markets than in developed markets, but even in the developed markets, that's a consistent. Now, the issue is that at any moment in time, some of those factors will outperform or underperform. The trick is to combining them. And I agree with Stephen that it probably is not a good practice to sell components to the investors. What one needs to do is selling them solutions where all those factors are blended appropriately. And I'm talking within the one particular asset class such as equities, but also across all the asset classes. So I agree with Stephen there that what we need to sell to or advise to the investors are complete solutions that demonstrably add value.
Jason, and I've got a quote here from the CEO of Alex Forbes towards the back end of last year in the Business Day, Davy de Villiers, who said that, and Alex Forbes is one of the country's largest pension fund administrators, that the industry can do more to lower fees and improve the lives of many struggling South Africans. And I think that is the bottom line here.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, we agree that fees are a significant tool for investors to use to be able to achieve their objectives, because, you know, it takes a huge toll over the potential long-term returns. But, you know, I have to say that, you know, you also have to acknowledge, and I think Stephen mentioned this, that, you know, the choice of investment should not just be based on fees alone. And, you know, you obviously have to prioritize fees, and you want to make it competitive for clients, and you want them to be able to access it, because I think access is a strong theme. But also just the choice of investment and being smart about, you know, picking, you know, the right strategy. Do you want something cyclical, defensive? Do you want something balanced? You know, just really understanding what the investment's risk profile is and objective that he's trying to do. And obviously fees is a strong component, and it will help investors, you know, on a cumulative basis to meet their financial goals. But, you know, we also just want to think about other ways of other criteria of choosing what the investment should be.
Yeah, absolutely. I still think it boils back down to that issue of trust. And how do we get more people to trust the industry and have that important conversation? Thanks for tuning in to the show tonight. That's all we have for you. Sylvia A. is up next in the line for our Cape Town listeners. And in Gauteng, Carolyn Staines, Classic Wind Down.